From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's get ready to head back to school. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey, Kathy. Hey, Ross. It's back to school season. And here, we just started a couple of days ago. I know some places don't start until, after Labor Day. But people are at least heading back to school. And so we thought it would be fun to have a little bit of an entrance exam as I pretend to go back into school.
Yes. See if you're worthy of being accepted, or do you need remedial grammar training?
That's probably what it is remedial. You know, it took me the longest time to find out what remedial meant. I mean, not like when I was an adult, but for the longest time I would hear about remedial education and I didn't know what in the world that meant. Anyway, has nothing to do with
actually,
anything.
But I'm going to interrupt you here for a second, Fletcher. And this is so interesting. As a kid, though, probably, too, you didn't bother looking it up. You just sort of accepted you didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
Is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. That always gets me with that. Because we were kids, we had to go. If you had to go to the bathroom, you had to say, can I go to the lavatory?
Oh.
Which, for some reason, do you remember that, Kathy, at Travell? Or did you not have that?
I believe we did have that, the lavatory. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, like, that's a lot like laboratory. And I thought, well, maybe it's the sort of same thing. But I never bothered looking it up or anything. I just
it's
figured,
like, whatever. I don't know what they think I'm doing in there, but I gotta know.
It's such a weird thing being a kid, anyway.
Quickly, before we do the thing, I want to do another thing and thank Buster83843, who gave us a wonderful 5-star review and said, I really look forward to hearing this show. It's one of my favorites. Thank you, Buster83843. That was on Apple Podcasts. If you are listening on a podcast platform that lets you leave a review, then we would love it if you did, especially if it's a 5-star review. And not, this is actually why I wanted to bring this up, aside from Buster's fine comments, not a 1-star review, which we got from a person I won't name. But it looks like it was because of our episode about the third conditional, and they were really mad at us about what we said. And people can go back. I won't explain the third conditional and all that right now. People can go back and listen to that episode. But I thought this was interesting. Their comments are, if quote unquote language is changing is used to justify such outrageously wrong usage, why bother talk about language at all? And I think that's exactly why you want to talk about language, right? Is because it's changing and it's not a static thing. And that's what makes it so interesting.
What fascinates me is it's the whole prescriptivist versus, now my mind blank.
The descriptivist?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Because I must admit, I started with more of a prescriptivist bent like years ago. And over the time, the more I study language, the more I study English and its workings, the more I bend. Because you do see that, like, the rules, as we taught, how many times have we said the rules are fake? You know, like, mm-hmm. the things that we were taught as kids are not real. It's fake grammar, in effect, a lot of it.
I'm going to interrupt, though. Do you mind if I interrupt?
Please. Feel
okay,
free.
I'm going to say, I think we had, there are two things, there are two threads that were basically, there are two opposing ideas here. And I think I think what we try to do is get a synthesis. We're doing a snapshot. Language does change. But I mean, to some degree, you have to agree. We have to all agree that we have words that used to mean one thing and now mean another. We have to all agree that a cat pretty much is what we all know a cat to be.
Language might change. Terrible is something different than it used to be.
Terrible has changed. Exactly. And the key thing is, though, I think we're doing a snapshot, and there are, if not rules, conventions that are best to follow if we want to communicate well with other people and if we want to write a memo or write a book that are best to do. But you also have to acknowledge that this is a snapshot. This is a one-time thing. But like, as time goes on, these things are changing. So I think what we try to do is acknowledge, yes, there are things we should follow right now if we want to be clear and basically seen as correct. But we also have to acknowledge some of those things that we now view as wrong will not be viewed as wrong as time goes by. That's really what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think that's, frankly, a lot of what we were saying with the third conditional. Is that, Ross, you said repeatedly that it is technically wrong. like that you didn't, you know, that was clear that, to me, that you said that, but also that it is very clearly changing. And I don't think, I think this person may be misunderstood. I don't think we justified exactly using it because things are changing, quote unquote, but, and maybe I did, I regard this particular issue a little less strict than you do. But we acknowledged very much that things are changing, and we have to. If we're going to keep communicating with people, we have to acknowledge when things are changing.
Exactly. I still use the conditional. I mean, the subjunctive. If I were going,
we've talked about that all the time, you and I. Yeah.
Yeah, and if I was going is becoming much more common, and to the extent now where it's probably not going to be viewed as incorrect, and I would not correct someone with it.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you were saying, Ross, because I mean, we've talked many times about register and how, like, there's a time and a place, and it's best to follow the quote formal rules or conventions, as you said, which I think is a more apt term. And I think you're right. It's just easier. I mean, I would just argue it's just simpler. It's like, why start a fight with somebody? You want them to think it looks good. Yeah, do it. Yeah. Follow it. But I do think more and more, as you said, with the was and the were, I don't think anyone cares anymore about the subjunctive. You and I might use it.
Oh, boy, I do.
Fletcher, you do, actually.
Yeah.
But I think more and more, I think fewer and fewer people are using it. And I don't think anyone bats an eye anymore. And I think that you could write a book or look in the Times or any like top newspaper now, and they're not using it half. They're eschewing it.
Yep.
So I go back to calm down, personally.
Yeah. Although I have to add one thing, I was horrified. I was watching the World Cup with my son. And I thought, maybe I've over-applied this. When there was a goal, I said, who was it? Alice goes, it was he. I thought, oh my God, what have I done?
But the weird thing was, is you don't say that.
No, I know, but he must have heard me talking.
I don't
go as him. Yeah, I know.
I know what happened. You've done to my nephew.
I know.
Okay, before we jump into the school quiz, there was a really fun thread that I found online about something I didn't exactly know about, certainly not by name, and it's something called the resumptive pronoun.
Why don't you read the sentence, Fletcher, and then talk about it, and then we'll chat about it too.
Absolutely, and I just to credit the person who made the thread, it looks like their username is Prescriptivism Must Die, and it's M Grammar on Blue Sky. So thank you very much to M Grammar. Prescriptivism Must Die. Anyway, the sentence, it's just part of a sentence, but I'll read what's here. It says, a glitch, which we will explain how to make use of it later, ... and goes on and so forth. And then this person goes on to say, by standard grammar rules and most syntactic analyses, that it shouldn't be there, how to make use of it later. The extracted noun is supposed to leave behind a silent gap, not a pronoun.
Right.
Because, normally you would expect it to be a glitch, which we'll explain how to make use of later.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And so,
instead of the it.
So this is the resumptive pronoun. Can you describe what this is?
Well, I mean, the technical term is a personal pronoun used inside of a relative clause that refers back to the subject, the sentence's main subject. The it refers back to glitch.
Right.
And as Kathy said, technically there should be a gap there, which Kathy repeated, a glitch, which will explain how to make use of later. The it is basically filling in that little gap. And that in English is not seen as correct. There's no question about it.
But it can be helpful.
It can be helpful. And what also interested me, though, is, I mean, it's not like a standard idea in world language. And what interested me is in Greek, I just thought of it in Greek. And like, you could say like, igata putis echo tagala, it would be the cat which... I have the milk, which is the cat whose milk I have. You use one right there. And then in Arabic, I thought of another, which same thing. I have manzal elavi. Well, we don't need to know the Arabic, whatever.
No, you don't have
But at the end, you put there's another resumptive pronoun. I went on and on with this to the extent where I was like, oh, this is really interesting. So my wife ended up calling it the presumptive pronoun.
Yes, very good.
I like that. I prefer that, actually.
Yeah.
But it's interesting you brought up Arabic because, I mean, most things say that it's most common in Hebrew, modern Hebrew, Arabic, Irish are the three
Irish.
Top users.
Love it.
Of resumptive pronouns.
I think they must be very helpful, especially when you're speaking out loud, right? Because when you're reading something, you can take your eyes and go back and maybe figure out what is supposed to go into that gap. But when you're speaking out loud, sometimes you probably have to use these, even if they're not technically grammatically correct, you have to use them to get people back on track with what you're talking about.
Yes. There are two basic usages where they pop up. One is called, this is going to get really technical, so I don't want to go into it. It's called islands. You basically have the clause is getting so kind of confused, you need it. This is the person that I don't know what said. You can't say what said. You need to have he there. This would be technically sort of correct.
Can you repeat the example, Ross?
This is the person that I don't know what blank said. You're saying he. You don't know what's going on here. Who said what? So you could throw he in there, which would be probably correct. This is the person that I don't know what he said. It's not pretty, but it would be okay. The big one is what Fletcher just said, is basically, particularly in speech, this is the dog, I saw this online, this is the dog that maybe he likes me. In that sense, the he is referring back to the dog, so it is a resumptive pronoun. You kind of get it like instantly hearing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they are definitely more colloquial than written on the whole. Yeah.
Because
I mean, I must say when you see it written, it sort of, well, no, I know. Thank you, boys. But because for me, when I see it written, it does throw me. I'm not going to deny it. I stumble more than if it weren't there. I mean, if the impulse is for that pronoun to help me understand, because it looks wrong, it makes me more confused. Do you know
when I see it? Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah. Kath, I think you're completely correct. It's a great argument against even this thread. It is not necessary. It goes back to like, we do have conventions that we should probably follow, because even if we don't agree with them, because other people may get confused. That's a really good point, Kathy.
Other people like me.
I think this really... And this is something I have to think about a lot, but it really outlines, again, that difference between written language and spoken language, because you don't really need it in most cases when it's written, because like I said, you can track your eyes back up to figure out what they're talking about if you've somehow forgotten. Right. When you're listening, those words go away. Like they go into your ears and you can't track back.
Right. Mm-mm. Exactly.
Especially if you don't know what somebody's going to be saying, you can't track back and remember every single thing. So that pronoun is very helpful and probably does not take you out nearly the same way it would in written language.
No, not at all. I think you're right. Because when you hear, when you're listening in real time. It's going boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're reading, as you said, Fletcher, you can go back and forward. You can go ahead. People like me always look to the end to see if I want to bother reading more. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the other issue, I think, to me, though, is I recall this learning a couple of these languages, is that English is standard. You don't do it. It's not good to do. We know it. But then people, when they're learning modern Greek or Arabic, you have to do it. And they're like, what's going on? And they have a problem translating that, you know, which is interesting, too.
Yeah. Mm.
But these are basically a problem with clauses. We're talking about, you know, a part of a sentence that gets sort of confusing or mushed up. And we're going to go now to the beginning of the quiz. This is not particularly a very valid quiz for school.
this is a Kathy and Ross liked this part of
the quiz. Yeah, and let's check if Fletcher can figure this one out. This is a tangled clauses, and if you can get, they're basically called center embeddings. And let's
and
see
there
if
are
you can.
Multiple center embeddings in this.
Yes. And we're going to see if you can guess what this sentence means. It is technically grammatically correct.
I sent it to him.
Yes. Read it first, Fletcher, then tell us what it says.
All right. The first sentence here. Good luck tracking this one with your ears, everybody. Okay. The rat, the cat, the dog chased, killed, ate the malt. The rat, the cat, the dog chased, killed, ate the malt. Okay. So the rat, the cat.
It sounds like Dr. Seuss now.
This is sort of built like Latin. It's interesting.
I'm trying to see. The rat ate the malt.
Okay,
The dog chased the cat. And I guess the cat killed the rat, I suppose, after
you got
the rat,
it. You got
malt.
It.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now read it with the right emphasis to see if it sounds more clear. It doesn't every time.
No, <it. laughs> The rat, the cat, the dog chased, killed, ate the malt.
Yeah, that's pretty good, yes, Fletcher.
That's very good.
Okay, you get 1 point, sense. Fletcher.
I have to start. I forgot. I got to start doing this.
Okay,
game.
Fletcher gets to, Fletcher passes kindergarten. Okay.
Oh, that's kindergarten? Oh, gosh.
We're tough teachers. We're tough. What can I say?
Okay, this one, we've talked about this before. This one basically depends on, well, it depends on how you, Let's read it.
It's a garden path sentence. Remember in the past we did a garden path sentences. This is a particularly irritating example.
Right. It winds around. Yeah. Okay. I'll just read it straight here. The complex houses married and single soldiers and their families.
Oh, you got it right there.
No, Ross. Just stop it, Ross.
I mean, I could have stumbled into it, but that doesn't mean I got it. The complex houses married and single soldiers and their families.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean?
Oh, the complex houses married and single soldiers and their families.
Yes. Yes, you got it.
Yeah, this is the whole key with this is the problem is complex houses married.
Yeah.
can be different parts of speech.
Right.
They can be adjectives, they can be verbs, and you have to, like, when you first look at it, you just sort of go, huh?
Yeah. So really we're saying married and single soldiers and their families are housed in the complex.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got it.
Wonderful.
Okay, now we have a really fun grammar one.
This is when it starts getting painful.
I know.
This is when it starts getting painful. Okay, thanks, guys.
This has been fun already. This was the fun part already.
Okay, now we're going to do the basics of grammar here, Fletcher.
Okay.
Identify the verb tense in the following sentence.
Oh, no.
We have played many games this weekend. Is it A, past simple, B, present perfect, C, future progressive?
Have played. It's the present perfect one.
You got it.
Very good.
Yep.
Can you describe what that is? You're talking about the condition now related to something in the past?
It's a completed action.
Oh, we are currently in the state of having completed this action.
Yes.
Correct.
Wow. So it's present. We are currently in that state, but it's referring to an action that we completed.
Right. What would be the past simple?
We played many games this weekend?
Yes.
Very basic. So far, you're 3 for 3.
And this is a fifth grade test, they said here in this one.
But we added stuff, actually. Okay, next, spell rarefy.
Mm-hmm.
We can give you a sentence. You, if you want to be like you're in the spelling bee, you could say, could I have that in a sentence?
Is it R-A-R-E-F-Y?
Yes.
Very good.
You got it.
That's I mean, we've mentioned E's and I's and stuff before, but that's always really hard, especially when you've got a word like liquefy that seems like it ought to be liquefy, but it's liquefy, right? Liquefy with an E-F-Y. Rarefy very much seems like it should be an I. I don't know why.
It's really an outlier. Yeah. It's really an outlier, I think. Because it does come from medieval Latin where there was an I. But
oh, okay.
The old Latin had the E, rarefacere, which would be rarus, which is to, then with facere, which is to make. So what does it mean, actually, before I go in with that?
I'm not completely sure. And you know, at some point in the past, we've talked about exactly this word, maybe not the spelling, I don't remember, but I don't think I was sure what it meant then either.
It's funny. This is one where the first definition is one that I know, the second definition, the first one I didn't really know, to make rare, thin, porous, or less dense.
Yes.
To expand without the addition of matter. I got to tell you, I had no idea. I didn't know that one. I knew the second, which is to make more spiritual, refined, or abstruse. That one
okay.
I knew.
So both of you have to go after school for detention
right. Okay.
And study
right.
Word definitions.
We have to write rarefy over and over on the
yes, right. To make thin, to make rare. Yes, to reduce the density of.
Interestingly, the spelling with the I is becoming more common, but I see there's a slew of businesses when I looked it up that are rarefy with an I. I wonder if it's because it looks like it's like rare stuff or, you know, what do you think? It just seems odd to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, if I looked at it, I think rarefy with an I looks better than with an E, personally. Yeah. I mean, it's to the extent where I'm not sure I would use the word because the spelling looks wrong.
It does.
Then you have to go through one of those Kathy moot meaning this, not that, you know, which we've talked about in the past. So I would go to make
well,
thin.
Well, the point is moot.
Yeah. This is another fun one. This is a killer for a lot of people. What is the difference between a gerund and a participle? We have talked about this in the past, Fletcher.
Man. Probably multiple times.
Okay, a present participle, Ross.
Okay, present participle.
Mm-hmm. Gerund.
Just to make it clearer.
One of them is nouning a verb, and the other one is adjectiving a verb, right?
Well said.
Okay.
Yes.
Very good.
But which one's...
Okay, which is which?
Gerund is the noun.
You got it. You got it.
That was mostly a coin flip, but I was trying to think about like a dangling participle, and I thought, well, that's not going to be a noun. So
okay, so let's do a gerund and then do a present participle.
I just want to say a present participle can be either a verb or an adjective.
Oh, I know, but we're going to do okay.
Okay. So a gerund would be something like his cooking is fantastic.
Very
excellent.
Good.
Okay.
Now do a present participle.
Let's see. His cooking technique is fantastic. That's not an adjective, is it?
Yeah,
oh,
it is.
Actually,
I mean,
it
is.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I was thinking cooking is a long, you know, is a hard task to learn, but no, yours is fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
His cooking because it describes the technique. It's a cooking technique. Okay, I did
right.
it.
Very good. Okay, we're talking about ing ending words as present participles and gerunds. Do all gerunds end in ing?
Oh, gosh.
And do all past participles end? Do all participles, I should say, end in ing? Not present in this case. Uh-oh.
Fletcher, there's a vital clue in that, I think, that you're going to quickly grasp onto.
Well, my answer will be no.
I wonder why.
I'm sorry, just how you said it reminds me of when you're a kid and you're asked the question and you're looking at the teacher and you're trying to slowly see.
Oh, Kathy, you gave me a pit in my stomach thinking of that.
Remember that? You'd be like, as I recall, Mrs.
Yes,
Clark.
Let's talk about this, though. That's the best I can do is no. But I can't think of an example.
Okay, let's do a past participle. Just think of it. We said a past participle. The gerund always ends in each ing.
It does. Okay.
Okay. The past participle. Okay. Remember we said it could be an adjective?
Yeah.
Okay. So now try to think of an adjective with a past tense thing that might be a verb-y. But it isn't a verb-y. It's an adjective-y.
I don't know. Like the cooked vegetables?
Fletcher.
You're good.
Is that right?
I'm going to get rid of your, a broken window, a written report.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Those are all past participles. Okay.
Well, the broken part of the
Yes.
Thank you, Ross.
Not the whole thing.
The window is not.
It's important to be accurate.
Okay. Fletcher, which sentence is correct? He snuck into the room or he sneaked into the room?
Okay, I believe both sentences are correct, but I would personally want to say sneaked.
Why?
Because I learned that there wasn't really supposed to be a word called snuck. But I guess it's a word now, or has been for quite some time. Yeah,
has been since the 1800s.
Okay.
Fletcher, you're really annoying because you're passing. We have to do another test next time, Kat.
Yeah, Ross, I know. That's fine. It's like
I know.
Up.
I'm like, I was just
You'll
as we were
know.
Talking,
make
I was
up
looking for
rules.
Some difficult grammar thing. This is actually sort of interesting. As we've talked about this before, but English has regular verbs or weak, sometimes they're called weak verbs that basically form sneaked, you know, sneaked, et cetera, you know, like I said, with the ed at the ending. The internal part, which is called ablaut, doesn't change. In the old days, there were more of the what are called either weak, strong verbs or irregular verbs. Now we call them, which would be snuck. The internal part of the verb sound changes.
Yeah.
Sneak, snuck for the past tense. Now, what happened mostly in English was those older forms where the inner thing changes basically became weaker and we kind of like switched to the ED ending in general. However, Kathy, you want to talk about the interesting fact of sneak?
I want to say, because in the case of sneak, sneaked was the original. Snuck was came later. Sneaked was first appeared, I think, in the 1500s, and that was it. And then about 300 years later, people started saying snuck, and it became more common. Now, I think it's more common than sneaked in the U.S., not in British English. But it's becoming, the media now use snuck, in both in England and in Great Britain, and in America, United States.
Oh, wow.
This is interesting on two levels. Number one, it basically goes against the normal pattern of change. We basically, you know, we have go and then it has irregular things. We have all of these words that change. And this one internally, this one basically took a normal, what we would say is a normal ending with ED and changed it. We have no idea why, because it goes against the pattern.
Yeah.
Why does it go against the pattern? What happened here?
The weird thing also is no other common verb is like snuck. Streak, you streaked. You don't say it's struck. You say struck for something else. Creak, you don't say cruck. I like cruck, though. I'm sorry.
Let me just try to think. That's interesting. It doesn't rock, reeked, rock, no.
No, leak. You don't say luck. You say leaked. You never say luck. It luck.
It luck. No, you don't.
Yeah, creak, crock, peak, puck. I like peak. Puck.
Yeah.
I puck through the curtains.
Yeah.
Now.
It's so strange.
You're right, Kathy.
It's
there's
so
none.
Strange.
I wonder why. I mean, the one thing about language, it really could be as simple as like one person one time wrote snuck. And, you know, like it was someone famous and someone else read it and go, oh, yeah, I like snuck. And they just started writing it. It just took off. You never know with these things.
To me, oddly enough, I think snuck to me sounds more sneaky than sneaked. Doesn't it?
Well, to me, I actually agree with you, Kathy. Snuck sounds better to me, too. I agree with you. Snuck
sounds more
sneaky.
Ooh, yeah. It does. It really does.
He snuck around the house lurking and yeah. I know. I agree with you completely.
Yeah, no. I think it's that simple. Snuck works. I mean, whereas puck instead of peak doesn't.
Okay, now Fletcher's going to be screaming, but he's doing really well.
He's got nothing wrong.
Oh, well, this one he might. Which tense is used to describe actions completed before a certain point in the past? Present imperfect, past perfect, future transitive tense, or present perfect tense?
This is the kind of thing that I go crazy on.
Okay, I should add here, I'm going to repeat them because I want to add one thing, because one of them could be called something else too.
Okay.
Present imperfect tense. Past perfect tense or pluperfect, it could also be called. Future transitive tense, present perfect tense.
All right, and we're trying to determine which of those is used to describe actions completed before a certain point in the past. So anything that happened before 1960, for example. Give me an example of a sentence.
She had finished asking the question.
Oh, before?
A half an hour ago.
Okay. Well, I actually do know the answer. It's none of these because you made up all of them. None of these actually exist. Like, no one could possibly believe that these
as
are
as far as I'm concerned, there's
tenses.
Only two, three tenses, past, present, future. That's it.
Let's see. She had finished speaking half an hour ago. Wow, that's really hard. Let's say it's the past perfect, just because we're talking about the past. That's literally the only one on here talking about the past, so that is my guess.
You got it. You got it. It's also called the pluperfect. That was the normal usage until they changed a little bit. And now, I actually, you know something, Fletcher? I think you passed all this. What we need now, this is what's going to determine it. Give us the Latin for pluperfect,
you're done. That will just pass you. You're right. You've already graduated, baby.
But with basically the basic idea, though, is with the idea is it's an action that occurs prior to another specified time action, which is exactly, you got it.
Okay. What about if we're talking about an action that happened after a specified time?
Well, you mean she will have done this after I talk to that?
Yeah, maybe. But that,
because that could be future perfect.
Yeah, okay.
They have that in Latin a lot. It's a pain in the butt, but whatever.
Yeah, that would be a pain. Oh, wow. Now, see, look, I say probably every other episode that I don't actually know the rules to things. This is exactly why. Like, how am I going to remember these things?
I agree with you. I don't think it's really necessary. I mean, it's fun. It's fun to quiz you on it so we can basically humiliate you on air.
No, I like it. I
but
like
he's
it.
Not being humiliated, Ross. This is what's bothering
me. He's humiliating us. I know.
No, I like it a lot, but like it really does make my head swim. And I just, I can never get those technicalities to stick. I think I synthesize them pretty well. Maybe I showed that just now with these answering these questions, but boy, I could never teach anybody this. It's incredible.
But you see, I actually agree. But to me, the synthesis is the key. I mean, being able to, like, you know, vomit out these terms to me ends up meaning nothing.
Yeah.
The key, really. Yeah. I mean, to me, the key is can you speak correctly? Can you use these things? You know, fine. Can you identify them? If it's a little vague, who cares? I think.
I agree with you. I think because of the languages that I learned, like ancient languages, this has been drilled and drummed into me. So I think it's sort of useful for me, but I agree with you guys in terms of it doesn't have to be useful for everyone. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you have internalized it, though, Ross. It's part of your makeup at this point. It really is.
It is. I see a gerund walking down the street and I go, that's not a past participle. That's a gerund.
I like the ing in that walk.
I know.
Okay, this is an easy one.
Okay.
Which of these is right? The woman that works here. The woman who works here. The woman which works here.
Woman which works here. I think we're leaving aside that last one.
I couldn't even read it.
I think technically you can say who or that, but I would absolutely lean toward who because it's a person. I mostly even lean toward who if it's an animal with a name.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's interesting. I think you're right. I don't do that with my animals. I don't say, I don't refer to them as that.
Yeah
who's no. it here? Yeah, I know. You're right. I do too. I agree with you.
No, you're right.
Fletcher, you did it again.
Okay, Kathy sent me a new problem here. It says, correct the following sentence and state the specific grammatical rule that was violated. I will not.
This is from an 1800s grammar test.
Yeah, and there's an interesting little codicil to this whole thing. Yes. So let's go.
Okay.
And let's see if you can get correct it and then also tell us the codicil. Okay.
The sentence is, every one of those boys have brought their own books. Probably I guess I would want to say every one of those boys has brought his, that's interesting.
Okay, let's go. Let's do this all. You're right. You're getting, I can see already the codicil kind of slowly coming up. Okay, tell us both.
So leaving aside, I think that codicil, I would probably want to say every one of those boys has brought his own books, but we do very much recognize the non-binary pronoun there, they there right now. So I think you could still say, well, certainly now you could say every one of those boys has brought their own books.
Correct. Because you can do a singular there now.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, the key in this one was subject-verb agreement. Every one is singular, so it requires has, not the plural have.
And the other rule was the rule of pronominal pronoun agreement. And we're now saying that there can refer singular, not pronouns. The old rule was gender, number, and person. We're saying that the gender one is changing.
Yeah.
Okay. Next is an easy one. Is this right or wrong and why?
Oh, okay. The sentence is, the data don't make sense here. It's right, because data is plural.
Yes. But doesn't it sound wrong?
No, I'm one of those annoying people who always changes the verb to match a plural when it comes to data. But, like, that's silly. That's just me being whatever. Data can be singular now, essentially, right? The data doesn't,
yes,
the data
it can
doesn't
now.
Make sense.
Right. It can be either one.
Yeah.
But the one that bothered me was the criteria don't make sense here. Really sounds bad, doesn't it?
Criteria don't sounds bad to you?
Yeah. You don't think so?
No, not at all.
Really? Not at all. Not at all for me either.
Oh, that's interesting. For me, it does. Criteria don't make sense. Sounds like I have problems. Both of them just clunk on me. They just, like, panic me.
Interesting.
That's interesting, Kathy, because we grew up together. The Criterion one in particular just seems...
It doesn't to me at all, but then the Criterion don't make sense here also sounds wrong. I would never write that sentence is, I think, the problem.
I don't think it makes sense to me. I don't think I've ever heard you say Criterion in a normal conversation. I don't think I ever have. Yeah, I mean, how many thousands or millions of words have you used, yet never once did you use those words in conjunction?
That's I might have written it.
Okay, Fletcher, now we're going to go back to, actually, Ross and Kathy roots. It's time for Word of the Day.
Oh, yeah.
Word of the Week,
word
I'm sorry.
Word of the Week.
Yes, week, I'm sorry. And Fletcher, can you pronounce and define the word we just sent you?
Yeah, I'll spell it out. APOTHEOSIS. APOTHEOSIS. I think it's apotheosis. Apotheosis is... I'm trying to think. I always think it's something like a prime example of something.
Yes, very good. The quintessence.
Quintessence, that's nice. I like quintessence. What does it mean? Can you break the parts down for me?
Sure. It's basically from the Greek, apo, which is the prefix, which means here changing into. And then let's see if you can guess the other part. The theosis part. What does that mean, do you think?
Theosis.
Theos.
Theos. Does that have something? Does that have something to do with
Okay, I'm change gonna, it into I'm Spanish. I'm gonna, what does yeah, Theos sound yeah. like in Espanol?
Yeah, do it theos, in Espanol.
Theos.
Dios?
Yeah, change that
God,
TH.
Something to do with gods?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Changing to a god. Deification. Especially of an emperor or a royal person.
Okay.
I always like that with the word, though, was when because in Rome, in ancient Rome, it was basically thought that emperors would become gods after they died. And there was a emperor Vespasian who was pretty practical guy, and he was dying. And he goes, oh, my gosh, I seem to be becoming a god.
So...
I was kidding about it. Yeah, no.
I like him. He seems like a good egg.
Well, he had a lot of problems, a lot of issues there, too. But
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
The fatal shooting of a teenager at a protest in Seattle has gone unsolved for 6 years.
This is open in your face. How are there no answers?
Our investigation has uncovered new evidence and witnesses who say they've never talked to police.
Did police ever call you?
Not once.
Listen to We Keep Us Safe, a new true crime series on the Embedded podcast from NPR.